Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
And welcome back to another day here at the Damage Report. Not just any day though, it's Wednesday. Big news Wednesdays, and we've got too much news. The rundown is bursting at the seams. You know who else bursting at the seams? J.R. Jackson is, and J.R. Jackson's here with us. J.R. is like 30 feet away from me, sort of, in a different room, but it's almost like we're doing the show together again.
Yeah, I mean, it's close enough. That's why I had to jump in and at least say hi to everyone while you're doing the pre-show. So sorry to interrupt that, first of all. But I'm also happy I interrupted because I like doing things like that. It's fun.
Exactly. I remember back in the day, Bart used to just like sidle into the shot and like give me some take about movies or something. And be like, and he's like, shut up about Rudy Giuliani. Here's what you need to know about the good, the bad, and the ugly. Anyway, I look forward to those days again.
Yeah, I did realize though that JR Wednesday was seeping into JR Tuesday, and I didn't like that. Someone came on trying to chat people up in the chat. So I heard about this. I want to make sure you guys know that was 100% me.
It was. He's 100% that chatter. Anyway, apparently we're having some sort of audio sync issue, possibly just on Twitch, but I'm sure our experts are on it. So what we've got for you is almost in sync 90 minutes of news, and it's gonna be so good. We've got the return of Meanwhile In twice in 1 week in this world. Yes, it's gonna be here. We've got dog news for you. Who are the good boys? Who are the not so good boys? We've got both of those. Let's see, we've got Kenny Clip's most recent revelation about what people are being taught in a Navy counterterrorism course. So that's definitely gonna be fun. Supreme Court weighs in on cheerleaders. It's about time. And some awful people too. And Fox News, with the perfect opportunity to show their right-wing populist credentials, curiously silent. We're gonna be breaking down why that might be. And then there's just a whole bunch of other stuff. And if we get to everything, which is looking less likely the longer I go on, we've got maybe my favorite story of the entire year to close out the show. So we're gonna do our best to get to that, JR. JR, don't look. If you haven't already looked, don't look. I don't want you to know what it is. But anyway, JR, thank you for being here. And thank you for being here, regardless of where you're watching. We love you continuing to support the show and the network. Please hit the like button, share the stream. The people know that we're live. And as we go through this, we're gonna be responding to your questions, comments, concerns, and stuff like that. So that'll be fun. And more on that to come. But JR, why don't we get this thing started?
I think I'm ready.
Okay, let's do it. I wasn't ready, but yeah. Now I think I am. New York's mayoral race isn't quite done. It's gonna take something like possibly 3 weeks to get the final results, but we do know a little bit. The sort of general shape of the race is pretty set. And one of the first casualties of that was Andrew Yang, who originally led in the polls for some time, did concede defeat last night after results from the first vote count showed him slumping, and former police officer, and I believe former Republican as well, Eric Adams in the lead. And so Andrew Yang, who had been leading for some time, is now out of the race. So here are the actual results for the first count. As of last night, you have Eric Adams, who might or might not actually live in New York City. And then you have Maya Wiley, who was the progressive in the race, who'd gotten endorsements from people like Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and others, trailing by like 9 points or so. And then it drops from there. You have Catherine Garcia, former New York City Sanitation Commissioner, down to Andrew Yang, Scott Stringer, who I believe AOC ranked second, and then down from there. So look, there's a pretty big gap between Eric Adams and Maya Wiley. I don't know how or to what extent the ranked choice additional votes can or you know, possibly will influence the final result. But that is, JR, that's what it's looking like so far, at least for the mayor's race.
Am I right? Eric Adams was involved with that that debate where they went off the rails and were hollering about, they were going back and forth about something that was completely unrelated. And I thought, this seems like the 2016 primaries for the Republicans. So I thought the whole race was just a toss up of clown show. And especially since, you know, we're trying to figure out who to replace over in New York as for the mayor race. But maybe I'm missing where he has this stranglehold on the race and why he's convinced so many people.
So look, I'm not an expert on New York City politics or anything like that. But Eric Adams is apparently a known quantity in New York politics for something like 2.5 decades. He's been around, not always as a Democrat, but he has been around for some time. And there are certain, some of the boroughs that he's just did very well in and apparently had some base of support. And it started off this whole conversation about to what extent social media following actually translates into a political following. Lots of people are like, see, Andrew Yang's got lots of followers, but he didn't do well. And all of you are saying that Twitter followers are the only thing that matters, even though I literally never heard anybody say that. But if you don't believe that, you sure like to pretend that others are saying it.
Well, Andrew Yang was tweeting and going on very bad PR tours with his social media
following. He had some
missteps. Yeah, so it's not just about, it's not always just about a social media following. This is one of those things where people like to say, oh, well, how many followers do you have? Oh, well, look at the subscribers. But that doesn't always mean that people are gonna like you, or that people are gonna like what you use your following for and the things that you say to all those people. You make more news because of those things. So when you do have these missteps and these outright ridiculous statements that you make, yeah, they're gonna have a bigger effect on you. It's not always just the perfect recipe.
Sure, sure. And so let's see. You know, as of right now, the progressive isn't leading, is unlikely to win. At least it's complicated. It's the first ranked choice vote, so we'll see what happens. And hopefully it'll work smoothly, so that more people will be comfortable with ranked choice elections coming to their area as well. Mm-hmm. But anyway, there were other races, of course. We want to touch on a few of those. So in Manhattan, the district attorney's race was still too close to call. Alvin Bragg, a progressive holding, and by the way, some of these are definitely candidates that I am not going to pretend that I am particularly familiar with their background. So before you take the pitch of the New York Times on someone's ideological background, definitely do research for yourself. But you know, hopefully we'll have some of these people on. But anyway, is holding a narrow lead over Tali Farhadian Weinstein in the city comptroller's race to replace the termed out Mr. Stringer, who was running for mayor. Brad Lander, a progressive Park Slope Brooklyn, led Corey Johnson, the city council speaker, by a similar margin as Mr. Adams led Ms. Wiley in the mayor's race. So it's not a strict the progressives got blown out thing or anything like that. Jumaane Williams, who's been on the program a couple of times in the past, won his primary with 70% of the vote for New York City Public Advocate. And you also have Tiffany Caban, who's also been on the program, who previously ran for Queens District Attorney. This is not a settled race, but is currently leading by quite a bit in one of the city council races. And in fact, as much as having a new mayor, of course, is going to be a big change, there's a lot of turnover in the city council as well, more by far more than there generally is in any random election. So who knows what's going to happen for New York? Who knows what could happen if a progressive wins, opposed to someone who the New York Police Union seems to be cool with and used to be a Republican. But anyway, that's what it's looking like for some of these races. Any other thoughts, JR?
No. Yeah. New York.
Yeah, we'll see.
New York.
I know it's tough. Honestly, like it's such a major city. Of course, mm-hmm. it does matter. What happens in New York does affect the rest of the country. That said, we are about as far from New York as you can get inside of the United States. Anyway, that said, I do want to move on to maybe the thing that's getting me most excited in politics so far today, at least. Let's talk about Buffalo and their new socialist mayor. What in America in this economy? India Walton, Democratic Socialist, poised to upset the four-term incumbent Democrat Byron Brown. And look, this is someone I wish we'd brought on the show already, but hopefully we'll talk to you in the near future. This is an exciting person that I am rapidly becoming kind of in love with. So you might recall a couple years ago when Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez won, that video went viral of her like reacting to winning in real time. I saw this video last night. Many of you probably saw of India Walton, who had just found out that she had much more than likely won, calling her mom to tell her about it. And I want to show you a little bit.
Mommy!
I mean, what are you gonna do? What are you gonna say to that?
That's it doesn't awesome. Get any more organic or natural than that. You know, we talk about politicians. Talk about how fake and fraudulent politicians are, and how they're not really real people. They're just taking marching orders from their donors, which are large corporations all the time. This is like a real reaction to something that she truly cares about, because she cares about her city and her state and her community,
sure,
and wants to do something different. Now, you remember the people made fun of Kamala Harris when there was that picture of her talking to Joe Biden. We won, or we made it, or we got it. Yes. I forget what stage it was, but this rang some remnants of that for me.
Yeah.
Except it was more at the direct level of someone who has been connected with people for much longer. You know what I'm saying? And yeah, I'm not mad at this. So many people got mad at the Kamala Harris and Joe Biden picture and how they, because they were opponents of them winning. And I get that. But so it's not to compare it and say that was fake and this is real. This one just has more of a direct connection to it, because she has these ideas of what she wants to do, which I know you're gonna get to, and that's the inspiring part.
Yeah, definitely. And by the way, you're gonna interpret this largely based off of politics. Like, if you hate socialism or whatever, then you're not gonna like that. In the same way that, like, you know, if we had had a version of that for Madison Cawthorn, where he was like, "Hey, Heil, mom, just wanted to let you know that I won," that wouldn't be that endearing, I guess. It comes down to your politics potentially. But anyway, that said, she's like, and again, I don't have like the biggest encyclopedic knowledge of her history. Hopefully, we will discover that. But she says that in her first 100 days, she's promised to sign a tenant's bill of rights that would install a tenant advocate and institute rent control. She wants to remove police from responding to most mental health calls. She plans to declare Buffalo a sanctuary city, and she will give you more. But I want to get to another bit of video, because she was asked about the fact that she's a socialist. And here's the thing: when that happens, what you're supposed to do is run like you're Steven Crowder and you caught someone who looked vaguely like Sam Cedar. You're supposed to get out of there, because that's the worst thing you could possibly be. But not for India Walton. Here's what she had to say.
Yourself a socialist? Oh, absolutely. The entire intent of this campaign is to draw down power and resources to the ground level and to the hands of the people. And when we think about socialism, you know, we're perfectly fine with socialism for the rich. We will bail out Wall Street and banks and give $1 billion in tax incentives to one of the richest people in the world to build an empty Tesla factory in South Buffalo. And when it comes to providing the resources that working families need to thrive, socialism becomes scary at that point. So I'm very proud to be a democratic socialist. I am proud to have the support of Buffalo DSA and National DSA. I received a call from Congresswoman AOC this evening. And I'm just excited to be a part of this movement that is ushering progressive politics into Buffalo.
It's that easy. No, you're not terrified. You're not gonna run away. You're gonna actually fight back against the nonsense propaganda that has made people think that socialists are what the working class should fear. They're the ones that they should be so scared of. Those who are trying to get them higher wages, a little bit more influence over the workplace, better working conditions, things like that, actual possible retirement someday. Those are the people that you should be scared of. And she's not scared. And who knows? I mean, we'll have to see, like with any candidate, once you're elected, let's see, do you right, maintain the same values? Do you push for the same things? I didn't go to high school with her. I don't know her, like, but we're gonna find out. We're gonna see.
Yeah, asked and answered. So that's the thing. This is what happens when you have principles and you have a direction you want to go with things, with actual policy behind it. So if someone says, "Oh, are you a socialist?" and you have to be afraid and go, "Oh my God, that's a trigger word. People who don't think are gonna get mad at me if they hear me say, kind of. Let me say it's a socialist, kind of, somewhat, 25%." Because then they've won this narrative for this whole time, for this long. We have to push back on that. So if you have some answers behind it for reasons why you are, and point out that no one's asking the kinds of corporatist politicians when they go and they win a primary or they're first elected into office and they go, so are you a corporatist? Because we saw your donations. We don't ask people that. You know, we don't ask them that immediately. Oh, so your major donors are all corporations. So are you not a capitalist, but a corporatist? Like ask them. And then or why is not the pressure on them to answer that question and explain themselves? She was asked that question and she explained herself happily because the things that she has values and principles on are things that the majority of Americans would like to see impacted in their lives. It's just the way it is. It's such a simple equation. I'm being elected to represent people and do what they need to help them assist their lives because they pay me to do that. Not only just in the campaign contributions, but also in their taxes. We pay so much money and don't get anything back. And because someone stands up and says, let's start giving something back to the people who pay for it, they're considered a bad person. We're so upside down and backwards right now. We gotta start flipping the script on that.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, like you said in response to the first video, just it again, like we're probably biased, probably in a bubble or whatever, and things can change and blah blah blah. If you like someone, you're gonna value things they say differently than if you don't like them. But that said, like she does seem more genuine. You know, she hasn't obviously been like, she's not like Drago being groomed by all these scientists in a lab somewhere. She was a nurse. You know, like, and she seems like it. So, you know, when she calls her mom, it seems genuine. When she like can't help smiling that AOC called her to congratulate her, like, yeah, I remember when AOC first called me. Yeah, I was smiling like a dummy. So that's a real reaction from a real person. And beyond that, I have one more bit of video that I love so much. So. She's obviously excited to have been elected. It's a big thing. The first socialist mayor of a major US city since Milwaukee, which many of you probably learned from Wayne's World. But anyway, here's what she has to say about the movement going forward.
Today is only the beginning.
That's right.
From the very start, I said, this is not about making India Walton mayor of Buffalo. This is about building the infrastructure to challenge every damn seat.
That's right.
All that we are doing in this moment is claiming what is rightfully ours.
That's
we
right.
are the workers. We are the workers. We do the work.
Yeah, and like, you know, I apologize if I'm missing that's some reference to something, but like, we are the workers, we do the work. That seems like a pretty effective slogan, actually. Not, we are the workers, so we want to be bamboozled by right wingers into caring more about Dr. Seuss and you know, anthropomorphic potatoes genitalia. No, we do the work, we want to be paid for the work, we want to be respected for the work that we do. I love that video, JR, it's so good.
No, it's the kinds of lines and the kinds of approach that would make people have to actually dispute the facts and dispute what she wants. And also, we talk about a unifying message. People, politicians have confused enough people to think a unifying message simply has to say everything you want that this politician says you want, we'll go with, and everything that this politician says we want, we're gonna have to find somewhere in the middle to find it. How about we do the things that benefit American people? I don't care if you're a Republican or a Democrat, those things that she is proposing will benefit you because there's collective people. All of you guys pay into this. It doesn't have to be because I want something to help the American people that's a lib socialist policy only. Because again, we've talked about this many times, even when Obamacare came in, which was very half-hearted. But even when that came in and people talked about the actual things that were included in it, people that were so against Obama and Obamacare, when they didn't label that name to it, they're like, oh, that sounds pretty good. Because it did. It's just straightforward. It's what it did. Anytime they take your brain away from the policies of actually what's in these policies and the effectiveness of how they will change your life, if they take that out and then go with labels instead, you know you're being tricked.
Yeah.
Think about what's being done and said, and take some time to get to some of the details. And I get if you don't have that time, but listen to someone who's telling you.
Yeah. Yeah, and that applies to literally every politician. So one of the reasons that people have so much respect for Bernie Sanders is because he has been saying the same thing for longer than I've been alive. Like he didn't change once he got into the Senate. And with India Walton, I mean, who knows? I mean, when you see speeches like that, you can't help but wonder where her political career is gonna take her. But we have to actually watch. I don't know her. She's not in my board game group. We're not related. I don't know her.
We're gonna work on all. We're gonna work on that. We're gonna work on the board game group. Maybe we'll get in there.
The Mayor Walton, if you'd like to play some online board games and talk about socialism, I think that would be awesome. Let's please do that. But anyway, we will see. And we need more people like this. A reminder, actually trying to change the system by talking about it, by organizing about it, by running for office is incredibly difficult. It is often very slow. It's going to be riddled with defeats. I can name so many candidates that I wanted to win so bad that have lost. Bernie Sanders is on that list twice. That said, it's also the only way. And if India Walton had decided, you know, the system, the establishment, it's so annoying. I don't like politics. Let's just tweet about it or whatever. Then she wouldn't be mayor. And we wouldn't have AOC and we wouldn't have, you know, name a ton of politicians. So like she says that her political inspiration was Cori Bush. Cori Bush did that same fight in her area. And so now they will prove to be the inspiration for other people. And really fast, I just want to play one more thing because I really appreciated this. So in that video, she talks about how she's putting them on notice. It is building infrastructure to challenge every seat, school board, city council, everything. She screen capped a part of the video with that quote and then tweeted out, I said what I said. Yeah, if you're in elected office, you're being put on notice. I love that. And she is, of course, on notice as well going forward. Every politician is. You're only worth what you can actually get done. But that said, it is a reason to be excited. And I'm excited right now. Thank you, India Walton.
We're looking to see what's next. I like it.
We are. Okay, we're going to take our first break. When we come back, socialism. Good for Buffalo, apparently bad for the military. So we'll be giving you Ken Klippenstein's latest at The Intercept after this. Okay, everyone, we're about to jump into some more news, but I did want to let you know about a couple things that are coming up. So as you know, we're in week 3, I think, of Indisputable, and it's 8-week run. This is Dr. Rashad Ritchie's new show on TYT, which you can watch every day at youtube.com/indisputable TYT. But I know what you're thinking, when can I watch it? Well, that's super easy, right after this program. This show ends, we take a little breaky break, and then there you go with Indisputable and Dr. Rashad Ritchie. Very exciting show today, by the way. It looks like Brett is gonna be the co-host, so that's gonna be fun. He had a great show, I think it was last week with Dr. Rashad Ritchie. And in terms of guests, you get two. You get Killer Mike, so you know that's gonna be fun. And then one of my favorite international guests to bring on, Nellyfer Hidayat's gonna be on. Nellyfer has joined us to talk about her podcast about human trafficking, gun trafficking, food trafficking, animal trafficking, all sorts of things like that. Now she's got a podcast delving into a whole bunch of different topics, so she's gonna be joining Dr. Rashad Ritchie as well. So definitely stay tuned. And by the way, happening tomorrow is our tier 3 YouTube members Q&A. If you're a tier 3 member on YouTube, we do this once a month. We hang out, we talk, sometimes about politics, sometimes not about politics. It's a lot of fun. So if you'd like to upgrade your membership or become a tier 3 member, that will be available tomorrow at 12 p.m. Pacific time. And all of the past ones we've done are up on the channel for tier 3 members as well.
Yeah.
Now that said, why don't we jump back in the news?
Let's do it.
Okay. New leaks provided to Ken Klippenstein and now to us via The Intercept, a Navy counterterrorism training document obtained exclusively by The Intercept has an interesting view on socialism and how it compares to other ideologies. So in this training document, they have a section that's subtitled Study Questions, and it includes the following question. Anarchists, socialists, and neo-Nazis represent which terrorist ideological category? The correct answer is political terrorists. A military source briefed on the training told me. So like they ask you this open question. Hey, so you know, you got neo-Nazis and then you have, I don't know, like the new mayor of Buffalo. What's the link? They're both political terrorists according to a counterterrorism training document. So this is the Introduction to Terrorism and Terrorist Operations document. It's part of a longer training manual recently disseminated by the Naval Education Training and Command's Navy Tactical Training Center in conjunction with the Center for Security Forces. The training is designed for Masters at Arms, the Navy's internal police. And an anonymous military official said to Ken, "It's just ineffective training because whoever is directing the Navy anti-terror curriculum would rather vilify the left than actually protect anything, despite the fact that the most prominent threat is domestic right-wing terror. Or is it? Perhaps the DSA types? I mean, after all, like the right-wingers will like set bombs. The DSA members sometimes call each other comrades. So you decide." JR, what do you think?
Yeah, okay. So the only thing I disagree with on that last from this anonymous military official is that this is an ineffective training. It's very effective. It's 100% effective. It's doing exactly what the people who've proposed it to do is to brainwash the people that are involved with this internal police within the Navy to think a certain way. So we talked about training for police officers just in civilian interactions. And of course it goes through the military training. There's plenty of people in the military that have skewed views of what life is. Just because they're in these positions of power and enforcement doesn't mean that they have everything figured out and right. And in fact, it also doesn't mean that they're purposely trying to teach them something that makes any sense. It's why there's all this push against the way universities and colleges teach folks and this inclusive approach to how we interact with each other. All these socialists, these libs, these progressives, I can't believe they're brainwashing our children as soon as they leave the house to tell them that everyone is not evil and against them because their life is different than theirs. It's so weird. But at the same time, the reason that they think that all these libs are brainwashing your children is because they're brainwashing your children. They're brainwashing your teenagers and they're also brainwashing your young adults that are in the Navy that are in positions of power. They need a certain kind of a militaristic anti-progressive type of approach for some reason. I'm not sure if it devalues your fighting force. It keeps you from doing things in a more heinous way. I'm not sure what they're looking to build in folks to have them come with this skewed version of reality.
Yeah, it's just complete nonsense. Look, I don't know if it's the sort of thing that's designed subconsciously to get people to be so biased or if it's a result of the people who write this growing up in a system that has trained them to be super suspicious of these types, or if it's both, if it's the causality works in both directions, but it's nonsense and we need to fight back against it. That's why the title of this stream is Why You Should Be Excited for Socialism. That's why we think it's so awesome when openly democratic socialists are winning elections. It is utter nonsense to claim that such a broad political ideology and identification is the same exact thing as neo-Nazis. I'm sure, but by the way, many anarchists would also have an issue with being lumped into that. But yeah, like no, if you're a socialist, you're a terrorist. So, you know, like if you're a terrorist out there watching the show, raise your hand. I think there's a few of you. Anyway, as that military official pointed out, Ken will also point out in his article on The Intercept, which you should definitely take a look at, that look, you can train the masters at arms in this nonsense, but the military does actually know whether they want to publicly acknowledge what the real threat is. Both the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security have identified white supremacists as the deadliest terror threat to the US. Back in October 2020, the Department of Homeland Security issued its first annual Homeland Threat Assessment report, stating that white supremacists were exceptionally lethal and will remain the most persistent and lethal threat in the homeland. So all of that is true. It's based off of the actual threats, the actual plots that they've uncovered. How much of that will actually filter out to regular people? Will they understand the nature of this threat? Will the media accept it? Because, you know, something about the socialists being naturally inclined to be political terrorists, there's not a lot of mainstream media that's gonna have a huge automatic knee-jerk opposition to that. So that's sort of my fear, JR.
Yeah, whenever facts are put forward like that about the actual threat and much of the domestic terrorism that we see, who it comes from, and then nothing is done about it blatantly and openly. You saw during Trump's his one term, we saw how much he was ignoring it. In fact, directly in the face of it happening in front of him was downplaying it. Every time someone would ask him about those rare occasions when they asked him, so your support base is based in white supremacists. And also these studies show that white supremacists are the leading terror group. Are you looking to ramp that down a bit? No, because we saw even what happened after he lost the election, he ramped it up further. That's his power base. That's where he gets his intimidation factors from. So whenever any kind of uprisings or violence breaks out that he also advocated for even during his camp, during his primary time. That's what he's looking for. So Republicans, conservatives always talk about law and order and deterrence. They know what deterrence is. They always talk about it. Punish the people that you see doing the bad things, and maybe you'll stop more from coming out, inspiring more and more of it. So when you don't do anything about it, it grows. They know that, and we see it growing, but they ignore it. They just brush that part aside. And whenever you see a one particular group that's obviously the problem getting brushed aside by this other very powerful political party, I think it's pretty obvious that that's who they want to keep in power.
Yeah. Well, I agree. And if you are out there in a position where you have access to documents like this and want a safe and secure place to air them, head over to The Intercept. Ken Klippenstein's contact information is available in the article that we're referencing here. So go take a look at that. He's done a number of great pieces like this. Great work by Ken. Okay, that said, let's move on to our next topic, switching it up just a little bit. The recent suite of Supreme Court decisions continues, this time siding with a cheerleader in a free speech case after she was punished by her school for things that she said very much not at her school. So they ruled that a Pennsylvania school district had violated her First Amendment rights by punishing her for a vulgar social media message sent away from school grounds. The vote was 8-1 with Justice Clarence Thomas dissenting. That's fun. The case concerned a cheerleader named Brandy Levy, a Pennsylvania high school student who had expressed her dismay over not making the varsity cheerleading squad by sending a colorful Snapchat message to about 250 people. So, colorful. How colorful? What colors? Well, let's let you know a little bit about that. She sent the message on a Saturday from the Cocoa Hut, a convenience store popular with teenagers, and sounds like what I would name the shed in my backyard. Includes an image of Miss Levy and a friend with their middle fingers raised, along with a string of words expressing the same sentiment. Using a swear word 4 times, Miss Levy objected to school, softball, cheer, and everything. And so the onus is on you to sort of put together how that works, but I think I've got it. How are you doing? Anyway, it was on Snapchat. They're designed to disappear. They're ephemeral. You throw them out there and then they're gone. But another student took a screenshot and showed it to her mother or coach. And isn't that student just the best kind of person? You're awesome. You're so fun. Anyway, the school suspended Miss Levy from cheerleading for a year, saying the punishment was needed to avoid chaos and maintain a team-like environment. You know, where you don't swear but you snitch. Anyway, so she decided, no, I'm taking you to court, and she ended up winning. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, and so now the precedent is, you know, being set for the degree to which maybe schools can try to silence students in this level, high school students, when they're not even there. You know, I mean, I'm sure she walked through the hallways with middle fingers up, hands in the air, and putting in everybody's face, saying, F this school, F the softball team, F cheer, F everything. I'm sure they could do something about that, because you're walking through school disrupting everything. But anybody who decides to watch this girl's Snapchat and see what she has to say, that's up to you, bro. Yeah. You don't have to follow. You know, it's one of those things, like, you're gonna follow someone and see the things that they said and get offended by it and move on. Especially if it's not dealing directly with you. I wonder what the background is. There's some kind of a rivalry between the two of them, this person who outed her for being there. And then it's the school somehow thinking. Also, what damage does this do to the school?
I mean, it creates chaos.
I mean, so suddenly,
but I agree.
If my 16-year-old kid is gonna join the cheer team the next year, they go, oh, but she was that one girl last year who said F cheer. Yeah, I'm not doing it anymore.
I don't support it anymore.
I'm gonna transfer.
Look, we've known for a very long time that these sort of rivalries run deep in the cheerleading world. I watched a series of documentaries called Bring It On growing up, and clearly those are still as true today as they were when they were released. But that said, this is fairly amazing that she was successful in this. And by the way, it's all context dependent. Like, me joking about the person being a snitch. Look, if she said, you know, F cheer, I'm gonna blow this building up. Well, then yeah, you can screenshot it and you can send it to someone. And in that case, the Supreme Court would be totally fine with that being given to the police and potentially being suspended and a bunch of stuff like that. But that isn't what was happening here. It was just her airing her anger. And related to that, I would say if you are Brandi Levy, this is like a prime time to release a t-shirt. You know how they have those ones with like the word and just do one that has school softball cheer and everything with a middle finger emoji after each one. You'll make like thousands of dollars. You should definitely
way
do that.
More than that.
Probably. But there are one or two more wrinkles here. One wrinkle was brought to my attention by Jordan Yule, a friend of the show, who tweeted out this little bit from one of the bits of reporting on the Supreme Court decision, pointing out that the Biden administration sided with the school district.
Of course they did.
Because of course, they're the Biden administration and the Biden DOJ and Merrick Garland are they're basically like those like Substack contrarians. It's like you just have to have the worst takes on literally everything. So yeah, of course they sided with the snitch. It was probably Merrick Garland who screenshotted the Snapchat in the first place. Don't let him friend you. He's not a good guy.
Do you know who else they sided with, John?
What's that?
In the Supreme Court decision, it was 8-1. Do you know who the one was?
It was Clarence Thomas.
The one was Clarence Thomas. Clarence Thomas said a school can regulate speech when it occurs off campus, so long as the approximate tendency to harm the school, its faculty, or students, or its programs, it has approximate tendency to harm the school, its faculty, or students, or its programs. I'm not sure who it harmed in any of those, all those examples, which one of them got harmed. He went on to talk about how we're trying to catch up with this pace of technology, because she said it on her social media page. And although it wasn't happening in the school, many people associated with the school had the opportunity to see it, and therefore it affects the school, and we need to keep up with this technology thing.
Yeah.
There's a small part about that I agree. You have to start considering the technology part and understand that you can't control people's minds, their thought processes, and what they write away from school just because it's on social media. No, you can't control people 24 hours a day. No, you can't control a 14-year-old 24 hours a day. When she goes home, she can do what the hell she wants as long as her parents are allowing her to do these things. So he can address the whole thing about keeping up with tech, but it sounds like he wants to keep up with tech to make sure we can stretch these limitations from people's speech, as long as we don't like them, to these type of tech things. Not all tech is getting so far. We have to understand that we can't go out and police people's thoughts. He's on the wrong side of that thought of it. He's totally on the right thought, side. But the wrong side of it.
Well, I would say that Clarence Thomas is on the side of cancel culture because he wants this cheerleader to get canceled over throwing up a middle finger. Unfortunately for him, as many people are pointing out in the chat, this is a cheerocracy, not a cheertatorship. So deal with that. The final point, just a historical footnote. Supreme Court has occasionally weighed in on free speech issues when it comes to students, generally in favor of limiting them. The last major decision on students' free speech was back in 2007, when the court sided with a principal who had suspended a student for displaying a banner that said "Bong hits for Jesus." Let the bong hits for Jesus guy go. Seriously, who's he hurting? He can't hurt anyone. He's doing too many bong hits for Jesus. It's for Jesus that he's doing it. You can't even do it for Jesus. Anyway, maybe it was the reference to religion in schools. I don't know.
He got in trouble for that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he's still in solitary confinement. Anyway, okay, so with that, I'm joking about the solitary confinement. I think he's fine. Now, with that said, we are gonna take our second break. When we come back, IKEA wanted to memorialize and give some recognition to Juneteenth, and it went pretty much how you'd expect after this. Okay, JR. How would you like some more news?
Well, only if we're gonna make sure we don't skip the D block. That's all I care about.
Oh no, we're about to go to the D block literally right now. We have two dog related stories. I almost made the D block the dog block, but that'll be happening a little bit later on. So definitely stay tuned for that. It'll be in our last third. For now, let's turn to this bit of news. An IKEA in Atlanta wanted to recognize Juneteenth. And so they decided to put together a menu to commemorate foods that they thought would accomplish that. What they did was put together a menu, which the store told employees was intended to honor the perseverance of Black Americans, which included dishes like fried chicken, watermelon, and mac and cheese. And JR, I feel like we've done this story 9 times. I don't know why this is always the go-to for schools that want to show that they know what's going on. Employees said 33 people called out from work as a response to that menu. It sparked an internal email response from a store manager who said, "I truly apologize if the menu came off as subjective." I think that means offensive. It was created with the best of intentions by a few of our coworkers who believed they were representing their culture and traditions with these foods of celebration. One employee told The Hill, "You cannot say serving watermelon on Juneteenth is a soul food menu when you don't even know the history. They used to feed slaves watermelon during the slave time." Also says none of the coworkers who sat down to create the menu, nobody was black.
Crazy. I thought they just said that it was believed they were representing their culture and tradition with these foods of celebration. So if none of them were black, which culture and tradition? And theirs, are we talking about? I don't know. Maybe they misspoke when they said it was theirs, and they know what they're talking about and doing. This is one of those things where it's happening with it's Pride Month as well, right? And then we just got Juneteenth recognized as a federal holiday.
Yeah.
And now companies, corporations, people in general just want to make themselves look better by saying, "I'm on board too. I got a rainbow flag. Oh, as you guys see, I wore red, orange, and yellow all at the same time. It's part of it, but it's okay."
Yeah.
It doesn't endear you to anyone else because your menu, even if it was accurate and you have some actual food that you see as black culture, right? Even if that was accurate and no one had an issue with it, is that going to increase sales? What are you doing this for? What's the idea here?
I'm assuming there was some, like if you dig into that, there's some kernel of wanting to do a good thing. But
this is the thing. Okay, there's another part of it. And I feel like I said this ironically on the Juneteenth half hour that I had there. What's the point of diversity? We're just gonna have diversity for the sake of diversity. So when politicians and everybody make sure they have a diverse group around them, they have a diverse staff, that they have like a chief of staff that maybe isn't from the same background that they're from, and maybe they have something that has a robust, all-inclusive nature to the way that they'll make decisions. It's so that you can be represented by people who know what the hell they're talking about and know where they're coming from, so that your message to the rest of the folks who came from those communities can connect to them. So why would you assume that people that aren't from the community can make the decisions about that community? And if you do have diversity there, make sure the people that you have that are there know what the hell they're talking about. It's crazy. Yeah. You don't just throw people in for the sake of throwing them in there. You have black employees. Why weren't they a part of this? You know what? They'd have told you this before John on TBR was talking about it. They'd have said, "Hey, you guys, you might want to shut this dumb idea down. This is ridiculous."
And you know, it's funny because like this came up obviously over the course of the weekend, but I saw a lot of tweets to the effect of when it was recognized as a holiday, it was like tweets like Bed Bath & Beyond, don't even think about it. Like it's like, oh God, all these corporations, like they're gonna do stuff that is gonna be so bad. IHOP is gonna become like IHodge for Juneteenth or something. No, you don't. Anyway.
Yeah, they're gonna have like you know, it's some restaurants are gonna have like a reparations sale. All black folks come in and you know, it's like stuff like that they think people are gonna clamor for. Hey, relax, take a deep breath and listen. Yeah. It's the easiest way is to listen.
Well,
because you still lack a degree of respect for the people that you say you're celebrating.
Yeah.
It's just internal. You don't have enough respect for them to actually talk to them. It's the simplest form of learning. Talk. Instead, you go, "I know it all. I still know it. Let me tell them what they're about."
Yeah. Now, I think you're right. You got to talk to learn. Unfortunately, sometimes it's not enough because they heard the concerns. They revised the menu, and now it includes collard greens, cornbread, and mashed potatoes. Which, like, I think they might have had mashed potatoes before. Honestly, I'm not sure. Come on, IKEA man, I love you. It's terrible.
Just let it go. Just
let it
forget about it. Just apologize and move on, and hope that enough people don't see it. Because
be proud of your meatballs.
Yeah, those are good.
Lingonberry jam.
Those are good.
Dollar hot dogs.
Because by the way, cornbread and mashed potatoes. I mean, that's on everybody's plate on Thanksgiving.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. Okay, let's move on to something arguably even worse. Critical race theory is everywhere in right-wing media. Your kids are being propagandized to, they're being taught that they're bad. Now that is not true, of course, but it's also not enough for the right to just say that they're teaching your kid to hate the color of his skin. They gotta go further. The one who goes the furthest will make the most money, get the most clout. And I think in this case, we're gonna have to give it to Michael Savage, who went on Newsmax to say this about critical race theory.
My blood's boiling listening to Chuck Todd. I wanted to reach through the screen and smack him in the face. Does he have children? Can you imagine having a little child who goes to school and is told that he's no good, his race is no good, he's evil, his parents are evil, his nation is evil? These are the same SOBs who lectured us for 20 years about don't be a bully, tolerate everything. And now they're beating up white children in schoolrooms. I've studied history. I know where this starts. I know where it ends. It started in the same kind of thing started in Germany. The Jews were no good. The Jews did this. The Jews did that. The next thing you knew, they were being excluded from swimming pools. They didn't put them in concentration camps overnight. I studied this intimately. I am Jewish. I know how this starts. Attacks on white people is exactly what was done to the Jews in Germany in the 30s. Don't fall for this garbage. This is the road to the death camps. Stand up to these bastards and sue them.
Has he studied history? So he studied history.
No, intimately, JR.
He intimately studied history enough to know that this leads to, it doesn't go straight to concentration camps. It goes to people being excluded from pools. What country were people excluded from pools and which people were those? Oh, it goes on to death and march you into death. What country systematically killed and used a certain kind of person for their economic gain and then threw them off to the side and treated them like animals? Which country did that? To which kind of people? Oh, you mean those people that have been oppressed, enslaved, and murdered throughout the entire history of the country? Those people are the ones that are in power. Those are the ones that are coming after your lily white children that are innocently walking through the world, knowing everything about everyone's culture and background and history. Because they learn about it, right? Are they learning about it? The people that are 30, 40 years old now can tell you that they didn't learn about it. And that many of their outward views about others was limited. And they shaped it around a disparity in what they think these people are. But instead, it's those people that are now being persecuted. They're telling your children you're headed into some kind of concentration camp to get murdered off. Because he studies history really well. We ignore every atrocity that we've done to black folks here. And now that people are saying, hey, let's pay attention to that and make sure we don't continue to do that. In fact, fix all of the broken systems that we've had in this country doing that. Now that's an attack on you. Anytime you think that your entire your network of your life and your family and your history is threatened because you're gonna learn about what you've done to other people, you're disparaging your own background. You're saying that your worth is with the type of people that enslave others, that oppress others, that murder and systematically kill them. Mm-hmm. That's what you said your history is. You're teaching your lily white children that they're bad people. By not accepting that they don't have to be like that. That they don't have to continue the same systems that were horrifically put in place here, specifically to target a certain kind of person. You're saying that to your kids, no one else. Someone's trying to teach your kids to be better and you're saying, no, I want them to still be horrible. That's what you're doing.
And that there's something they shouldn't know about. There's something about them they should run from and hide from, as if it's gonna work. As if you block the teaching of critical race theory in schools, so the kid's never gonna be exposed to any of this. He's just not gonna be prepared for it. He's not gonna understand it. He's not gonna get the context of it. And it teaches your kid to be weak, to not have the strength to understand history and to try to make the world a better place than it regrettably, tragically was for every minute of world history leading up until right now. Like to teach them to be ignorant and afraid and to always see themselves as a victim. That's what you're teaching your kids to do.
You know what it sets up to? It sets up this direct violent confrontation. It's either we learn about something or they're coming to kill us. And if they're coming to kill us, that means we gotta kill first. That's just the American way, right? You have to defend yourself from the attackers. That's what we've always done. That's what we've unleashed any war we've been a part of is they're coming to get us before they've come to get us. Yeah. So now these people are coming to get us because of what we've done to them.
Yeah.
And we should be afraid. It's time to fight. It's setting up a fight.
And it's so revealing. They're gonna do to us what we did to them, which isn't even true. It's just so revealing of what this person really thinks about race. And I feel like a little bit like Joe Bluth. Like, you think that they're teaching people to like hate white kids, but I'm white. I'm gonna have kids, and those kids are gonna be somewhat white. You think I'm gonna teach them to hate that? Why would I do that? If you're conservative watching this, why would any of this happen the way they're saying? It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. They're clearly hiding something. They're clearly manipulating you. It is not the roads to the death camps. It's the roads to an accurate understanding of our history. That's not as sexy. That's not as exciting necessarily, but it might be more productive. And I don't think we need to run away from that. We don't need to run away from our history or the learning of it. Anyway, we're unfortunately out of time for our linear audience. Thank you so much for watching us. We do have more on YouTube and Twitch though. So if you're watching those platforms, we'll see you in just a few. Welcome back everyone to what remains of the Damage Report with me, Johnny Arola, and JR Jackson on Big News Wednesdays. Some people are saying it's a hashtag. I'm not saying it, just some people are saying Big News Wednesday is a hashtag.
You said nothing, anyway, John. They've said
I didn't it. Say anything. Anyway, thank you for being here, everybody. I did want to let you know about an event that's coming up soon. You can go to tyt.com/events to find out more information. But the gist is this: in Cleveland, I'm almost certain it's Cleveland this time, we're going to be having an economic justice town hall on June 26th. Nailed it. Cenk Uygur, Killer Mike are going to be speaking with Senator Nina Turner about living wage, Medicare for all, a number of important issues. It's going to be awesome. Go to tyt.com/events. You can find out more information about getting tickets, which are going to cost $3. That money will be donated to Rock the Vote. That's going to be awesome. And if you'd like to see a little bit of Killer Mike before the event, you can stay tuned later on at youtube.com/IndustryYT. For Killer Mike, who's going to appear on Indisputable with Dr. Rashad Ritchie, as well as Nellifer Hadayat, one of my favorite people, is going to be on there. Oh, and Brett Ehrlich as well. So all of that should be a lot of fun. That said, JR, are you ready for dog news?
Well, I'm considering I'm not at home today. I'm totally missing Sprocket because I mean, I can't live without him.
That I have Sprocket. Well, we're going to go over some good news. We've got a bad dog and we've got a good boy. We're going to give you both of those today. Governor Greg Abbott of Texas is a pretty horrible guy. That's been clear this year with him, you know, signing the voter suppression bill in Texas, demonizing trans youth, pretending earlier this year that windmills were the cause of the energy grid problems. But now he's gone too far because he's coming for your dogs. He vetoed a bill on Friday that would have made unlawful restraint of a dog a criminal offense, sending animal rights activists and legislators on both sides of the aisle into a fray and spurring the hashtag Abbott hates dogs. And this was quite a bit discussed online. Julian Castro tweeted, "I have to hand it to the governor. Anti-voting rights, pro-animal cruelty is a bold re-election measure." And it's one that he thinks he can win on in Texas. And honestly, I'm not sure that he's really wrong. So what is this bill that he vetoed? Well, State Senate Bill 474, dubbed the Safe Outdoor Dogs Act, aimed to ban the use of heavy chains to keep dogs tethered. The bill had bipartisan support in the legislature, passing the House 83-32 and the Senate 28-3.
Wow.
In Texas, they're coming together to protect your dogs. But in his veto, Abbott said that state statutes already existed to protect dogs from animal cruelty, and the penalties proposed in the bill of $500 to $2,000 and jail time of up to 180 days were excessive. The bill said that dog owners could have dogs outside, but could not restrain them with short lines and chains or anything that could cause injury and pain to the dog. JR, would you like to side with Governor Greg Abbott?
No, because this is the thing, bro. It's crazy. So I'm really trying to find the motivation behind it, because a lot of times you can just follow the money. You know, maybe there's some kind of organization. I'm not sure which organization is advocating the cruelty towards dogs that paid him for his campaign. You know, yeah. So like, and again, as we saw the way it passed in the first place, how overwhelming it is. This is none. We talked earlier about unifying messages. Doesn't matter which side of the aisle you're on. It's kind of hard to be like, yeah, you know what? I'm all for this bill that allows cruelty towards dogs because that helps my life in some kind of way. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to find what helps you out. Yeah, sure. I grew up in the country in St. Louis, in the 80s and 90s, and there was dogs tied up and stuff, but people weren't advocating for dogs like they are now. Or people weren't considering dogs to have this certain degree of need and care and rights that we didn't before. So that seemed normal then, you know? We also used to think kids didn't have a certain level of pain that they would have. So a lot of times anesthesia and stuff wasn't given to children way, way, way back in the day, right? Because they thought kids can't feel it. So we learn and we figure things out. And when you do, you kind of let go of the craziness, like, oh, this is gonna be too hard on dog owners that need to tie their dogs up. And by the way, you know what happens a lot of times, and this is just maybe an anecdotal event, but you know, when you get the floods and hurricanes and tornadoes, whatever happens in these wild areas and people evacuate their homes, many times they leave their dogs tied up against the house to sit there and deal with the issue because they're getting out of there. Mm-hmm. And so they leave their dog tied up and he's watching the impending death come upon him.
Oh, geez.
Does that sound like something you want to support? It just seems weird to me. Oh,
I'm just so happy to have you unified with me in support of dogs. I love it. And the fact that in Texas there was actual bipartisanship, and he attacks it, and he goes on to say, in terms of why he opposes, he says Texans love their dogs, so it's no surprise that our statutes already protect them by outlawing true animal cruelty. He says Texas is not a place for this kind of micromanaging and overcriminalization. Micromanaging. So why did all those Republican state legislators in the Senate and the House, why did they support it? Are they bought out by Big Dog, whose name is Clifford, by the way? Why were they, are they in favor of micromanaging? I don't know what's up with Greg Abbott, because you make a great point, JR. This doesn't seem like one where there's a clear financial interest. So is it just that he's one of the many Republicans that is so broken that he can't love a dog? Is this to try to appeal to Donald Trump, a guy who seemingly hates dogs? In fact, uses dogs as the biggest insult he knows.
Sure does.
I don't know.
Okay, so the little part of it, he said he's outlawing true animal cruelty. The statute's already there by outlawing true animal cruelty, which means he's insinuating this is not actual animal cruelty. We have true animal cruelty on the books. This is fake animal cruelty that about tying up dogs and making sure there's heavy chains on them and whatever length of a rope, all these details about it. And by the way, one more small thing about this. He's talking about micromanaging and overcriminalization. Just yesterday, Lakers player Alex Caruso was arrested in Texas for possession of marijuana. He had a grinder on him that had marijuana residue in it. He was arrested for that in Texas because they don't micromanage and overcriminalize in Texas.
A consensual thing you can do for yourself. Micromanaged. Yep, 100%. Also, credit to Connecticut for legalizing marijuana this week. My hometown, or home state. Anyway, so that's obviously the bad dog. So let's move to the good boy. Are we ready to transition to this? I think we are. Awesome, let's do it. And now it's time for news from around the world. And meanwhile, in. Meanwhile, in China, there is a Buddhist monk who, through the course of his life, has helped to fight back against the pervasive issue of stray and unhomed dogs in China. Apparently, there's like 50 million stray animals in China. He has, through the course of his career, saved 8,000 dogs. Jeez. He's a Buddhist monk, and he gives these dogs either a new life at his ancient monastery, where he has many of them, or at a shelter that he runs in a Chinese city. He's cared for 8,000, a few hundred of which, by the way, will eventually be resettled in Europe or North America. So some of them stay in China, others get sent around the world. He says, I have to rescue them because if I don't, they will die for sure. He gives vaccinations to dogs. That's so awesome. And then, and you know, I'm just gonna send out a warning to you. We're about to play a bit of video where he talks about one of his dreams for later in his life, and just take a look at this.
感觉到他们很幸福，也感觉到很值得。当然，更多的是想念他们。一直有这样一个梦想，有朝一日能闲下来出去看看他们，有机会去看看他们，跟每一只从我手里救出去的拍照留念一下。
Okay, if you're listening on the podcast, he said that he misses them when he gives them away. Someday he hopes to be able to take a trip abroad to take pictures with all the dogs he sent away, which is like, I feel like we're related. I feel like that's my like older brother or something, because that's all I want to do is take a trip and take pictures of dogs.
I was just gonna say, I said if there's like a split of a person that then somehow this guy ended up being was he a Buddhist monk? What is he? Mm-hmm. He's a monk in China, but John is a talk show host in America. Like they're the same person. They were split basically at birth. Same.
Well, except he's done this good thing, and I take care of my dog, Hilo. Anyway, he began doing this back in 1994. He started treating cats hit by vehicles on the road. Ugh. Back then, there weren't a lot of stray animals, but that has changed a lot in the last 4 or 5 years. He says he gets up at 4 a.m. each day. He doesn't get any money from the government to do this. He's borrowed from his parents and from other monks, and he gets handouts from donors. He says he has to spend about $2 million a year, and he needs 60 tons of dog food every month. That is just crazy.
He spends $2 million a year? Where's this cash coming from?
Donors and stuff like that, apparently, like people support him in that way. And hopefully after this, you know, gets all this press, he'll get help too, because it is a big issue there. Now look, for some people, if you don't like dogs or whatever, this might seem like a weird use of your time, but like this is a person who has spent his life just trying to help out in a particular way, a way that matters to him. Like just think about a world filled with more people like this Buddhist monk, just trying to make the world a better place. And maybe for you, it's not caring for dogs. Maybe it's something else, I don't know. Maybe it's you're a young kid in Sweden and you start protesting because of climate change or something like that. But just imagine if more of us were driven by these sorts of impulses. This is one of the main things we search for on this channel, is people like this. And sometimes they're politicians. We get excited when we believe that we found one of those people get elected to office. Sometimes it's activists, sometimes it's authors, sometimes people we bring on as guests. But I just want more people like this around the world.
$2 million a year.
Yes,
bro. If off of donations, okay. I'm dropping the JR's candies. I'm going with like some kind of dog rescue. I need to make this $2 million.
JR's puppies.
And I'll take pictures cuddling with them and put it on JR's candies on my OnlyFans, just so you guys can have the full scope of what's going on. But $2 million a year, Jesus, this is awesome. There's no way he's not keeping some of that money. Number two, there's 8,000 strays running around in China. Man, they need like Greg Abbott to come in and like put us some leash laws, some tie up some of these dogs, make sure they're not running around everywhere.
Thank you. Anyway, so if you're watching, look forward in the future, go to www.onlypugs.com. Anyway, meanwhile, in. Meanwhile, in the Arctic, you know where this is going. You watch the damage report. Do you know what meanwhile it is? The Arctic's on fire. Obviously, why would we be talking about the Arctic except to tell you that it's melting once again? You want to take a look at a heat map of the Arctic? Here's a fun one. Take a look at this. Yeah, it's bad. It's bad. I think Sauron lives in the Arctic now. Newly published satellite imagery shows the ground temperature in at least one location in Siberia topped 118 degrees Fahrenheit going into the year's longest day. It's hot Earth summer, they say on Gizmodo, which I love. It is so bad. Now, obviously, the air temperature is not quite as bad, but it's still way hotter than you would imagine Siberia would be. And it's not just Siberia. We're experiencing record-breaking temperatures in a number of different US cities. Doctors in Arizona and Nevada warned this week that people could get burned on hot asphalt, sand, and sidewalks. Temperatures in Death Valley reached 125 degrees Fahrenheit this week, and it's expected to be even hotter tomorrow. But by the way, I gave you some crazy numbers there. It's only a little bit hotter in Death Valley than it is on the land, at least in the Arctic, which I am fairly sure is not the way the Earth is supposed to work, JR.
Oh, so I think I just saw this maybe a week or two ago, because I rely on you to give me updates on the disaster that's coming to us from climate change. But there was some new ice, a huge ice shelf that broke off, like something that is by far what we weren't expecting to happen. And you know, the thought is, oh yeah, fine, you know, we have a drought, maybe we have some more water coming our way. But that's not really the way we want these things to work, I don't think. And the fact that you can't walk around anymore, because we talk about these apocalyptic things that are coming, and conservatives say, oh, these libs, they come up with these fake scenarios that can never happen. Well, now in some parts of the world, you cannot walk on the ground, or you shall burn.
Get burned.
Because that, you know, that's not apocalyptic and that's not a crazy over speaking from these libs that are trying to scare you into doing something responsible with the place that you live.
That's the way it's supposed to work. It's supposed to get hottest at the poles. That makes sense. You know who loves a good volcano? Penguins. Most people don't know that. Anyway, yeah, this is a disaster. Obviously, as evidence of continued climate change, it's a disaster. But as we repeatedly return to on the show, it's its own disaster in several ways too. So we often talk about the fact that the breaking up and destruction for longer periods of time of sea ice is not only evidence of climate change, but it's a contributor to climate change. Because instead of having light colored ice, which can reflect some sunlight in the Arctic, you instead have darker seawater, which actually absorbs it, thus increasing the heating. But on land, it's a problem too. So the permafrost melting destabilizes the Siberian Earth, unsettling building foundations and causing landslides. When I was in the Arctic, we actually we talked to some people about the deaths that had happened from apartments literally coming apart because ground that was supposed to be frozen all the time instead was not. This happening also exposes the frozen carcasses of many ice age mammals, meaning paleontologists have to work fast to study the species that thrived when the planet was much colder. But when those sorts of things are exposed, that's also its own problem. As headlines like this will occasionally remind you, there are diseases hidden in ice and they are waking up. That was back in 2017. Mm-hmm. We don't have to worry about some sort of hyper aggressive virus. We emerging from a moose carcass. Isn't that basically what's going on? Well, I don't want to give a spoiler for a popular Netflix show, but there's reason to fear this. And I think more people need to take it seriously.
Anyway. But they won't, because it needs to be connected to them directly. And they've been told that the things that connect them directly are in opposition to this. That their life actually isn't affected, or their children's lives or grandchildren's lives. I guess people don't care once they leave here what happens later. You know, you got to think, so what are my kids going to experience?
Yeah. So while everything's going on and there's a lot going on, meanwhile, in the rest of the world, a lot of bad stuff is happening. Now, that said, we're going to read just a couple of super chats and then we're going to get into my favorite story. Maybe in the entire time I've been at TYT.
Is it because I'm gonna go on Netflix and binge something? Is that what we're gonna talk about?
Anyway, no, hold it together. Okay, with that, why don't we get into our last story? Today I went on Twitter and found evidence that Netflix is indeed reading my letters. Here's a trailer for the upcoming series, Sexy Beasts.
I want to get married, I want to have babies before I'm like 26. Do you have health insurance?
Welcome to the strangest blind date ever.
Hey, how you doing? Damn, how you doing?
Could you fall in love with someone based on personality alone?
What is your ideal woman?
Personality for me is everything.
Ass first, personality second.
Made my decision.
My sexy beast is...
Okay. I'm not going to give anything away, JR. I want your opinion first.
What could you be giving away?
My thoughts about it. What do you think about it?
I thought there was some kind of revelation, like you know one of the people on the show. Anyways.
I'm on the show. I was the beaver. I'm sorry, it's been revealed.
There's so many.
The B-roll.
I see a lot of things come across about Netflix, Hulu premieres, all this stuff on streaming services. And I never really know if I'm gonna watch it. I never know. Even when I go, I'm gonna watch it, I won't watch half the time. The things I know I'm gonna watch is when I log in my brain, as soon as I read that article, when it premieres. This premieres, I think July 21st, unless I did.
July 21st.
Yeah. Oh my God. I skimmed the article and I was like, July 21st, log that in your brain, JR. I do not remember these things. I naturally remembered this because like, you are gonna watch this. And by the way, the second season is going to premiere later this year. I know that already too. It's going down. It's going down.
Yes. Now let's clear the air of a few things. This is not a furry show. Furries are a subculture. I'm not a part of that subculture, but they are a proud people. This is not that. They're not going to be having sex in the costumes or whatever. This is, they say, a way to delve into whether you're actually connecting on personality. Obviously, this has something to do with The Masked Singer. Let's be clear about that. But I will state this, and I have never been more confident in a pop culture take. And I understand most people watching the show, whether they like me or not, think my pop culture takes are absolute trash. This is objectively a better concept than The Masked Singer. And I am definitely gonna watch it. And I already wanna watch it. Like in the past, there's been shows like The Floor is Lava that I said I wasn't going to, but then I did.
Yeah.
No, this is so much better. Like the singing, The Mask has nothing to do with the singing. It's totally a separate thing. But this at least is part of it. And they're doing more interesting things. They're going on dates. And then they get the reveal. And the revealing is not just, it's the reveal is whether my love will continue now. It's not just, oh, it's a guy who was a football player 8 years ago or something. This is so much better, JR.
Oh, so much better. It takes the elements of, I forget the dating show. And I'm, for some reason, I'm from back in the day when you had the three bachelorettes on one side and the one bachelor, and he asked them all questions and then he chose
love,
one.
Something like that.
It was awesome. That's a good idea. This one just allows us to have more visual and fun behind it. And it's more fun. I like revamps.
Obviously, it's not going to be the most important show ever. It is total guilty pleasure or whatever. And maybe it'll be terrible, but it looks pretty funny. And I want to see what happens to that beaver. Anyway, JR, thank
you. Will he find his ass?
Would that he could. Anyway, JR, thank you for joining me. Everyone, go check out onlypugs.com. Great to have you here. Thank you, JR.
See you guys. Have fun.
Thank you. And everyone watching at home, Indisputable is coming up with Killer Mike, Nellifer Hadiyat, Brett Ehrlich is going to be co-hosting, and Dr. Rashad Ritchie. Indisputably going to be a good time. You're not going to want to miss it. Go to youtube.com/indisputable TYT to watch. And for me, I'll be on with Anna in the second hour of the Young Turks later today. So I hope to see you there. But until then, stay safe out there, stay sane out there, and I'll see you soon. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.